Welcome to another Psych Sessions Sidebar episode. My name is Garth Neufeld. I am one of your podcast hosts along with Eric Landrum. Eric and I were at the APA convention this past summer in 2019. And as one of the sessions in the teaching track at the APA convention, Jane Hallen and friends did a tribute to Charles Brewer. Randy Smith was there with others, and we got to record it, which was fantastic. Now, the recording quality is not the greatest. You've heard us talk probably about the Snowball mic that we have, which is not our typical mic that we use for just conducting one-on-one interviews. And it picks up okay. But there are some of the people who are presenting who are moving around the room while they're talking. And so we did our best to capture that and to work on the sound levels. But it may not be the highest quality that we have put out there in the past, but the content is of the highest quality. This is an ode to Charles Brewer, one of the greatest teachers in our field, one of the greatest contributors through his life and career, and a lot of great teachers in the room for this event, which is a testament to who he was, because he left a legacy, he left an impact on all of us, and especially those who were close to him. So it was a gift to be in the presence of such great people and great teachers, and particularly those who knew Charles and could speak so fondly about Charles as a person, as an educator, as a perfectionist, and as a person who really impacted and changed teaching of psychology, both the journal and the practice in so many wonderful ways. We hope you enjoy this Psych Session Sidebar.
Welcome. Jane envisioned that music playing for about 5 minutes. One of the things we're going to do today, in addition to celebrating Charles, is talk about some of the famous Brewerisms. And one Brewerism is things are always more complicated than they are. And the sound just proved that. We are here to celebrate Charles, share memories of Charles, and bid a fond community farewell to Charles. These are the live people who will stand up here. At least at this moment, these are the four live people who will stand up here and regale you with Brewerisms and other sorts of Charles types and memories. Plus, we have a cast of hundreds or at least tens or twenties on video. And the plan is to finish in plenty of time to allow audience participation and audience sharing of Charles or Brewerisms or whatever that are meaningful to them. Charles Lee Brewer was born May 10th, 1932, in Pine Bluff, Arkansas. He attended Watson Chapel Schools, where he was known as Bo Brewer. That doesn't fit with the Charles that we knew. He was a good student, not surprisingly. He was class president. He played football and basketball, and was All-State in basketball. A few of us had a chance to see Charles shoot two-handed set shots at Clemson University during AP grading. It was a sight. He went to Hendricks College in Conway, Arkansas, and graduated there in 1954. He went to the University of Arkansas. Another surprise, he got a Master's of Ed in Counseling in 1956. He came back and got an MA in General Experimental in 1959. And he finally finished a PhD in Journal Experimental in 1965. You'll see why, the lag. After the 1959 Masters of Arts, he taught 2 years at the College of Worcester. Where he met Marjorie Sues. They were married in 1962. Marjorie had a master's from the Eastman School of Music. She was a pianist, a master teacher, and a gourmet cook. Daughter Stephanie showed up in 1966. Stephanie majored in history at William & Mary. She's now Stephanie Brewer Foley. She's the curator of the Whitchurch Stouffville Museum in Ontario, Canada. She'll make an appearance shortly. Charles left the College of Worcester to pursue his doctorate that I mentioned earlier. He realized if he wanted the teaching job he wanted, he needed the PhD. He initially went to Indiana to work on the PhD. Appendicitis and a realization that it was heavily research-oriented led him to go back to the University of Arkansas so he could get more of a teaching focus. Even as a child, Charles was interested in teaching. At age 4, he sat in the back of Miss Laverne Kennaway's third grade class. She was a family friend. The school was right across the street from Charles's house, so he went to entertain himself in a third grade classroom at age 4. Later childhood, before he started school, his favorite pastime was to play school with friends. And you can probably guess who was always the teacher. His dissertation was on paired associate learning of CVCs. Boy, does that take me back. Good old consonant, vowel, consonant, trigrams. He taught at Elmira College for 3 years. Two of the experiments from his dissertation were published in JEP in 1969. For you youngsters, there used to be just one Journal of Experimental Psychology, not four different subdivisions. I don't know if it was those articles that attracted attention, but he got a call from the Furman provost about an associate professor position that Furman was offering. They wanted Brewer to revamp psychology into a rigorous academic curriculum rooted in behavioral sciences. Sounds right up Charles's alley. So in 1967, Charles, Marjorie, and Stephanie left for South Carolina. 1967. In 1969, Charles won Furman's first teaching award. Pretty impressive after being there such a short time. He was tenured in 1970. He served as chair from 1972 to 1984. And as most of you know, he became an expert on John B. Watson, who was an 1899 Furman graduate. Charles was a cheerleader for many things. For the teaching of psychology, even for Furman. And the picture on the right, many of you have heard Charles lead the Furman cheer. Should we do it?
I think we're going to close with it.
Okay, we'll close with it. That's good. Marjorie died in 2007. Charles retired in 2014. Over 230 of his former students went on to get PhDs. Charles died March 30th, 2018. but he left quite the legacy. I'll give you a minute to read through that. You'll notice near the bottom of the list, the APF Teaching Award was named in his honor in 2003. Charles was known for his philanthropy. He made significant gifts to Hendrix, to Furman, to APF, and no telling what else. As I mentioned, an important part of Charles's legacy are his brewerisms. If you stick it out to the end, you can get what may be a complete list, but there are probably some that never made it into print. So one of the things that we are going to do, is to share our favorite brewerism with you. And I had a hard time, so I cheated, and we'll share two. Because I knew Charles for quite a long time, so different things were important to me at different times. This was important to me very early in my relationship with Charles. Facts fade fast, so learn concepts and principles. I still remember the first few years of teaching. Small private college in Arkansas that had a 15-15 load. I was coming in as the first PhD to teach the experimental-oriented courses. I knew I should do research, so I cleverly negotiated myself down to a 15-12 load. But it was a struggle. I had had a teaching class in graduate school, and the guy was the physio teacher at Texas Tech, and it was a self-paced course on teaching, involved no actual teaching. So I didn't really know what to do. So I thought I should get a book, a good book, and teach everything that was in the book. And I'm sure if I went back and looked at my first exams, they would be what happened on this date and who invented this and, you know, very, very fact-driven. Which, as you know, teaching any course, but especially trying to teach intro as a fact-driven course, will drive you crazy. So when I heard this from Charles, I said, that makes a lot of sense. The facts that they're learning in 1973, 1974 may not be facts by the time they get out in the real world, but the notion of being able to apply psychology to their real lives, being able to think critically and things such as that became more important. It's much more important to me for students to understand why the cats came running whenever they bang the food dishes together. It's an application of psychology to real life. And so my teaching and my testing have changed drastically since my early career. Fortunately, I probably wouldn't have lasted. My second favorite brewerism, things always take longer than they do, especially when there's more work to do than time to do it. This one came later in my relationship with Charles. How did I know Charles? I knew Charles in a variety of ways. Went to a teaching conference in Evansville, Indiana, MacTop, where I first encountered Charles. Listened to Charles speak in his inimitable way. Jane has a story about me introducing her to Charles. But I also learned about the Journal Teaching of Psychology at that conference. And I thought by now I had some decent teaching ideas. So I said, well, I'll write one up and send it in. I thought I knew something about at least my idea, not teaching in general. And I thought I knew something about writing in APA style since I taught the course on that. How many of you have ever received a manuscript back from Charles that had more written on it than what you wrote in the first place? Okay. Actually, for many years, the first or second manuscript I submitted was very, very brief. So I cut off the title page and the references, and I can Xerox it back to back. It was that short. And I showed them, this is what a professional editor does. So when I mark on your papers, I'm not trying to be mean. I'm trying to help you write the best paper that you can. And I heard Charles say that. And it's something I took with me. So that was my first encounter with Charles, sort of a professional mentoring type of role. Over the years, my relationship with Charles grew into a friendship. I had the unique experience of rooming with Charles at the AP reading for, I'm not sure, 10 or 12 years. That was quite an experience. I can still remember the bathroom. Fortunately, there were two sinks, and Charles had his side and I had my side. And I tend to leave things out because I'm going to use them the next day. Well, I changed my practices, at least while I was at AP grading. Charles had a very old and very expensive twin blade razor that every day after he shaved, he undid it, he washed the razor blade, he washed the razor, he laid them on a towel so they could dry out. So over time, my relationship with Charles grew into a friendship, but still mentoring, because at AP, whenever I would invariably walk out of the dorm in the morning and steer Charles in the right direction, Charles invariably went the wrong way. I picked Charles's brain, and I knew for a good number of years that I wanted to endeavor to follow Charles's in editing and teaching of psychology. So I picked his brain about that a lot. Once I became editor of teaching of psychology, that's when this came in. Imagine working on a dissertation for 12 years that keeps getting revised over and over and over again. That's the best analogy I can give you for editing a journal for that long a period of time. So that really rang true. Shared many, many moments of friendship with Charles. And it was probably my career highlight to follow him as editor of teaching psychology. So, when Charles left us, I lost a mentor and I lost a friend. And I know everyone else in this room feels very similar, and I know we all miss him. Diane?
Thank you, Randy. Can I just push the stand a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you want to change to your slide.
I don't have slides.
Yeah, you do.
I do have slides?
Yeah.
Who knew? Okay. Okay. Who knew I had a slide?
Yeah, okay. Slide singular.
Okay. Like virtually everybody in this... Whoops.
Apparently
I have a little slide.
You can't close it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you've read it.
Okay.
Terrific. Thank you. I mean, like most of the people, virtually everyone in this room, I love Charles. And that makes it very difficult to sum up the life of an incredible man in less than 15 minutes. Jane asked me to talk about Charles, specifically his work at APA and the board of directors. There's a lot to tell, but I will keep it short. If we have time later, my funniest stories were not there. And we can all do the Charles's dance later on. I've known Charles, never Chuck, never Chaz, never Charlie, in many different roles, working with him in many ways. Do you know what this is? Yes, some of you. It's a Jefferson cup. I'm guessing Jefferson had a cup like this, but I have no idea. People get a Jefferson cup after they have served on various boards and committees and working groups and so on. And you get it, your name is engraved on it, what you have done, and the year is engraved on it. I have several lined up on a shelf in my office. Can you imagine the number that Charles had? I once talked to him about it, and apparently it went on for quite a distance. That really tells you a lot about Charles' work with APA. Here is just a partial list of some of the reasons why he would get a cup for each thing. He worked on the membership board. He was on the board of educational affairs twice. Different terms. He was on the American Psychological Foundation, and Dorothy will tell you more about that. The Committee for Teachers in Psychology in Secondary Schools, the Task Force on Membership and Retention, Division Representative to Council, Board of Directors. That's just the partial list. And when I visited him in his nursing home, which I got to do, fortunately, I was able to have sort of a goodbye. I sort of looked around his room and wondered, would there be that row of cups? And there wasn't. And that made me think very deeply about what do you do with the flotsam, the jetsam, the tangible stuff of an entire lifetime career when you're moving into one room in a care facility. And I think for me that was very significant in thinking about Charles and thinking about his end-of-life issues. This is a question we'll all have to ponder sometime in the future, so I'm glad to leave you all in a cheery way. Everyone in this room, and we are at an APA convention, knows Charles from his extensive work at APA, his many, many committees, boards, and so on. He loved APA. He, as you know, he came to the conventions regularly. I did try to get some data. I couldn't actually ascertain that he'd been at every one, but he certainly came regularly. And along the way, he made many friends who all came to love him. His name is synonymous with teaching of psychology. He was the go-to person. And, of course, for anything about curriculum, he wrote the chapter on psychology curriculum, on active learning, on making teaching a respected science, and, of course, publishing in TOP. We had often joked that without Charles, Division II would be topless. He was the heart and the head of all efforts to improve education. And his numerous awards and recognition, Randy showed you some of them, attest to this. In 2005, Ron Levant, who was then president of APA, gave Charles an award, a presidential award. And the last paragraph I will quote from, quote, "Through his breadth of service, Professor Brewer has truly exemplified the APA Education Directorate mission of advancing psychology courses across all levels of education and the application of psychology thereto," end quote. Well, I've been worrying about how to talk about Charles' time on the board of directors. Not one of the best stories, but that's what I was asked to talk about. As you may know, if you've ever served on council, there's a variety of special interest groups that are called caucuses, and these caucuses meet before council, in the mornings of council, late at night, and the purpose is all, you know, to get a coalition around issues that are important to the caucus. So, for example, there are caucuses on clinical psychology, on women's issues, for gay and lesbian concerns, and I'm sure they must have changed their name to include everybody else now. This was before trans and bi and everyone else was part of the discussion. For people of color, for science, for children, and so on. Most of these caucuses endorse candidates for the board of directors. And at that time, with a few exceptions, such as the graduate student representative, the president was the only one who was elected to the board of directors from the membership at large. Everyone else on the board of directors was elected from Council of Representatives. If you wanted to be a member of the board of directors, you would make that known to the people in council. You would make a short presentation explaining what you are and what you stand for, what you would do. And from that, each of the caucuses would line up their preferred candidates. It's hard to know how important these endorsements by caucuses are. But, you know, it's like a political party that says if you're like-minded, if you care about these issues, these are the people that you should work for. When Charles was running for board of directors, none of the caucuses endorsed him. And he was understandably, I don't know what word to use. I want to say upset. I don't know if he was angry, hurt maybe. But, I mean, you know, he said, you know, none of the caucuses endorsed me. And I said, yeah, I knew that. It's hard to know. I don't know how many of you ever saw that emotion in him. I remember telling him at the time that he just did not fit clearly into any of those interest groups. I don't believe that anyone was opposed to Charles. I really don't. But they were just not for Charles. He didn't, you know, have a special interest. And he would not advocate specifically for that one interest. You may be surprised to learn that Charles was not elected to the board of directors. Now, I told you this was not going to be the best story. But I did check all these facts. He lost the election. But during the time interval between the election and I believe when the board of directors first met, Catherine Acuff, who had been elected, died. And since there was now an opening and Charles had the candidate with the next highest number of votes, he actually got onto the board as one of the very few people who was never elected to the board. Difficult for me to talk about Charles' time on the board. The board at that time was highly partisan. It makes today's Democrats and Republicans look like BFF. There were very, very strong divisions and groups, small groups that would vote as a block. But of course, there were wonderful board members also at the time with great integrity and cared deeply for the future of psychology. But unfortunately, what sort of stands out was the not so good part. And amidst all of this angst, anger and angst, there's Charles popping up. Most people on the board would not have known him very well. And he's sending everyone his best. From Traveler's Rest. So here we have this juxtaposition of events. And at least initially, although I do believe it changed, most of the board just did not know what to make of him. Most did not love his quirkiness, his sense of humor, the way we do. How many of you remember the way Charles would imitate Jack Benny with his well? He'd go, well. More importantly, how many of you know who Jack Benny is? You might imagine that here we have this group of people not familiar with him, and here's someone going, well, and giving, of course, the stare, at which we all know. As you might expect, despite his rocky start, on the board of directors, Charles was always a voice of reason. He was always prepared. And let me tell you, that is really a feat because you cannot imagine the number of documents and issues and things that come before the board. He had always read carefully and underlined and knew everything. He was a person of, he saw compromises where few of us were able to. When everyone else would be sort of rattling off comments, literally reading emails and newspapers while other people were talking, and sometimes or often laced their comments with curse words, there was Charles. Charles spoke slowly and deliberately. Bob Sternberg, whose term on the board directors directly correlated with Charles, said this about him. I had asked Bob about these things. He said, quote, "What I remember is that he was a true Southern gentleman in the best sense of that term, polite to everyone, but always wanting to do the right thing. He was not beholden, he was beholding to no group. That's why no group had endorsed him. He was not beholden. This was a good thing. He was a scientist, but he was the most independent voice on the board, and hence somewhat unpredictable. He was not ideological, but rather took each issue as it came up and gave it his best independent judgment. He was very funny." Bob had, we did come to understand his sense of humor, although you might imagine initially you're not so sure. "I remember thinking that if the world had more Charles Brewers, most of the problems would vanish quickly," end quote. I recall that when I was elected president of APA, I called Charles and I said, "I don't think I can do this." Charles was not kind. Charles was not sympathetic. Annoyed might be a better word. And although I don't remember his exact words, his message was clearly, "Are you kidding? Man up and do this thing." Although that's not language he would have used. Charles' legacy in psychology is all the work that he did for teaching and the students of psychology. It is the people in this room and in many others who are following his lead. That's his real legacy. He was the first person who told me that there were psychologists who actually cared about teaching and learning. I mean, I'm serious. I really had not known that. Before that, all I knew about the way to succeed in academia was to be the person with the most publications. You know, that's what I thought, that's how you do it. Prior to meeting Charles, I had been told and I had believed that anyone who spent time on her teaching was doomed to spend their life among the untenured. He changed my life. Charles, I believe that wherever you are, you're still living your legacy. And wherever you are still leaving no academic butt unkicked.
Hi, I'm Dorothy Cantor, and I serve on the board of the American Psychological Foundation and was president for 15 years. In order for you to understand more about Charles's service on the board from 2006 to 2015, I thought maybe I'd give you a short history of APF, because my guess is that most of you are less familiar with that than you are with academic life or with APA. APF was founded in 1953 by seven past presidents of APA. Their initial budget was $580. I would be remiss if I didn't mention here that APF now gives away about $1 million annually. The original group deemed that every past president would become an APF board member immediately after serving his, I wrote and her, but there were no and her, his term, and serve for 7 years. Frankly, their only mission was to give gold medals for lifetime achievement. And it sounded as if the requirements were designed to make each of them eligible for a medal. And so it stayed until two large grants were bequeathed to APF: the Rosen Grant for Gifted Children, and later the Platschek Grant for the Study of LGBT Issues. There were no past presidents with the expertise to judge the applicants for those grants, and so an expert in each field was asked to join the board. Now, there was one caveat. They would have a 3-year term, while the president still had a 7-year term. So all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others. In 1997, my predecessor as APA president broke with tradition and declined to serve. When my turn came the following year, I said, I'm not going to serve on a board if all we basically do is give gold medals to old farts. When the mouths of my fellow board members finally closed, I found them nodding in agreement. One of the earliest things we did was hold the first strategic planning session, and one area we highlighted was the governance of APF. We said that only three past presidents needed to serve on our 9-to-12 member board at any given time, and that the rest of the slots would be filled by people with an interest in our mission of helping graduate students and young professionals get financial help for their research and program development proposals. All members would be equal and would serve renewable three-year terms. Enter Charles Brewer. I hate to admit my ignorance, but as a practicing clinical psychologist, I had no idea who Charles Brewer was. And it goes back, I think, Diane, to why nobody endorsed Charles Brewer. However, many of my fellow board members raved about him as a person and about his reach into the psychological community. And so we asked him to join, which he did without hesitation. There was no question but that our mission was totally in sync with his life's work, helping young people get started in the field. When Charles came to his first meeting, I had an immediately positive transference reaction to him. He reminded me of my husband's beloved grandfather, painfully thin, a bit hunched over, and with a slightly gravelly voice. Admittedly, the resemblance stopped there. Grandpa Duck, as he was affectionately called, from Philadelphia, didn't have a trace of a Southern accent, and he was a shoemaker. The accent led me to ask Charles where he was from. His reply, with a straight face, was Travelers Rest, Arkansas. I truly thought he had made it up. But I looked it up on my computer. We didn't have iPhones yet. After the meeting, and lo and behold, it was a real place. Charles was always the... I'm a New Yorker, by the way. Trust me, I had never heard of Travelers Rest. Charles was always the most honest, genuine, and perhaps the most humble person I've known. It wasn't until I started thinking about him to prepare these remarks that I realized he always chose a seat toward the back of the big table, generally the last seat to my left. That didn't mean he didn't offer comments and thoughts, but he never needed to be the center of our attention. And what he said was always well thought out, germane, often pithy, and always helpful to advancing the discussion. He'd frequently open by saying, I'm no expert on this subject, but it seems to me, when he spoke, we all paid attention, because whatever he said was inevitably on the mark. Charles was extremely kind and generous on many levels. He was the first one to give other people compliments. I recall that he had the task of updating a chart of leaders in psychology for the revision of someone else's introductory psych textbook. He brought it to the meeting to show me that I had made the list. He would be poetic. He would wax poetic about our executive director, Lisa Strauss, both in front of her and when we did her annual performance review in closed session. He would make a point of saying nice things publicly about how junior staff members had helped him. I don't think there was anyone on the board who Charles didn't like or who didn't like him. Charles's generosity of spirit extended to him making a large financial gift to APF. I should note that all board members are expected to donate each year so that we can say with pride that every member is a donor, but we have never specified the amount of the donation. Donors who make large gifts have the privilege of naming scholarships after themselves or establishing entirely new programs in their own names. Charles was too modest to name anything after himself. So the board unanimously voted to rename the award for the teaching of psychology the Charles Brewer Award for the Teaching of Psychology. It seemed so appropriate. even though that's not where his financial contribution went. I can tell you that one of my favorite tasks over the 15 years that I served as president was to call the Gold Medal and Teaching Award recipients every year. When the Teaching Award became the Charles Brewer Award for Teaching, I can attest to the fact that each recipient that I called was even more excited than earlier awardees at the notion of receiving an award named for Charles, who was so well-known and beloved. Another responsibility of APF board members is to encourage others to donate to APF, so I encourage all of you to do so. Charles never wanted to make someone feel uncomfortable by making a direct ask for a donation. However, people loved him so much that once they saw that he himself gave so generously and supported APF, they did too. That resulted in more than $1 million for the foundation from his friends and colleagues. Charles's southern accent and beautiful manners belied his mischievous sense of humor. How could one person be so profound, scholarly, and informative, and at the same time hilarious and sometimes off color in his humor? At one board member, he asked a 20-something-year-old intern to define hooking up. When the poor kid was too embarrassed to answer, Charles said, "Well, when you all hook up, I'm just curious. Does that include intercourse?" I didn't want that to be my quote. Yes, Charles was known to be somewhat ribald and colorful in his choice of language. Lisa Strauss once told me that at least every other week, she would receive a note from the APA IT department that she had an email that was quarantined, which meant it contained an R-rated or even an X-rated word and could not be delivered. Lisa said she always knew who had sent her that note. So she would say that a prestigious board member had sent the email and IT would then deliver it. Charles didn't mind challenging convention either. He once told me that as the oldest or most senior or both member of the Furman faculty, he had the privilege of carrying the mace at commencement. That year, the President of the United States was to be the commencement speaker. Clearly, that president was not to Charles's liking, because he asked me, again with a straight face, if I thought he would be convicted if he killed the president with his mace. I offered that he probably would not be, at least by a jury of the people I knew. And of course, I can safely report that he did not do it. Even when his health was failing and he could no longer travel, Charles continued to respond to email discussions and votes. He was never one to quit. There are not many people who make a deep, lasting, and profound impression on their colleagues. Charles Brewer was someone who did, and we at APF all miss him greatly, as does the rest of the community of psychologists. Thank you.
We're now going to make a transition to my first effort at movie making. And I wanted to share one fact that some of you know about Charles, is he had a notorious sweet tooth. If you went to dinner with him, often you would end up sharing a dessert or many desserts. So we're passing out the only thing I could put in my luggage that wouldn't melt, Tootsie Roll Pops. Please take them. I'm going to transition now to the video. And if you recognize the dog, anyone recognize the dog?
Yes.
It's the Men in Black dog who sings, "I Will Survive." Talk amongst yourselves while we do this transition, if you don't mind. So what you're going to see, I invited several people to comment who loved Charles but who couldn't come to APA, but who knew that APA had asked Mary Kite, who then asked me to try to pull something together based on the fact that several of us were active at ACT and did a short ceremony for Charles. And people were very enthusiastic about doing that. So the video is about 45 minutes long. There are about 10 people in various lengths that talk. I just want to give you some sense. If you need to stand up, move around, that's okay. Now, can I get it to play, is the question.
Yes.
And I think I can. Now, we do want to save some time for you, and so I'm going to shorten the comments that I have. But here would be my brewerism, because one of the things that I don't think Charles got sufficient credit for was his capacity to see potential in people, that he could see talent that you didn't know you had. And so he could recruit you and groom you, and pretty soon you were a different person because of that skill. For me, though, what was more important was the fact that the phrases that you heard peppered throughout just penetrated my being as a teacher. Biped on the planet, not one scintilla of data to support the position. One of my favorites was Dan Jewell, which he reserved for people that had achieved the highest levels of achievement in his eyes. Are there phrases that that similarly have penetrated for you? Felicity of expression. I torment my students with that. I say, here's the rubric, but I'm looking for felicity of expression. And they say, what is that? And I say, you have to make me smile when I read it, right? Randy referred to the fact that he introduced me to Charles, and he did that at my very first APA in 1986 in Atlanta. I didn't know Randy very well, but he grabbed me by the elbow and dragged me into a room and said, you got to see this guy. And Charles walked in and did the stare. If you haven't seen it, it's no one can recreate it. But if you have seen it, how would you describe what that, give me an adjective that described what that was.
Penetrating
is one.
Medusa-like.
Okay. Medusa-like, what else? Intimidating.
Withering,
scary. I've heard daunting. And I went through, I was watching the stare, and while this is a postmodern update, I was thinking, WTF? What? Who is, just like Chris Cardone said, who is this guy? And by the end of this lecture on Watson, I was in love. And I had the good fortune to have my path crossed with his many, many times. But I do have some corrections. Because as a brand new film auteur, I don't think my career is going to be very long, there were some mistakes, so I want to correct some mistakes that were in the film. First of all, I did have an opportunity to hang out with Charles. This isn't a mistake. Our paths crossed many times, and we often were sandwich speakers. He would be the keynote speaker, either the beginning one, and I'd be the ending one, at a lot of places. And so I got to know him even better than Susan Nolan did, if you get my drift. But for those with little imagination, this is Charles in Elizabeth's pants. This is what he looked like as Dynamite Lady. And what was surprising about this act is that when, you know, Charles was quite austere, and if you knew him in the, from the outset, you thought of him as kind of hard to approach, but somebody said, you should be the Dynamite. Sure. That for me, that always suggested his capacity to be an all-in, no matter what it was. Like, I'm going for it. Now, about this dancing thing, the award for best dancer. It wasn't AP. It was, I believe, the St. Mary's Quality Conference on Education. And back then, we worked hard to get a book ready. And so in the evening, we were all really young, and we would blow off steam, and so one night we had a dance. This was a period when the electric slide was popular. How many of you don't know what the electric slide is? You youngins can raise your hand. Oh, you know what it is. It's a dance that's kind of tribal that involves some right angles, and you have to pay attention to where you are, or you get trampled. And so I thought, well, it would be fun to ask Charles because he'll turn me down. I went up and said, want me to teach you how to do this? He said, sure, and got up and excitedly got on the floor and was the worst dancer I ever saw because he didn't pay attention to the pattern. He didn't know what was going on. And he was having a lovely time. He
He just was so all in. He was just into it. But it was so bad, I so feared for him, that I ended up putting my hands on his hips and I physically moved him so that he wouldn't end up being trampled. That's what his department members described as he ended up getting the Best Dancer Award for. That was news to me. Most enthused dancer? Yeah. Best dancer? Oh my God, I don't think so. Best butt? Okay, I'm a little embarrassed in the Me Too era to suggest that there were female psychology professors who were comparing men's butts at the conference, but it was another era. And I will say, Charles, in a regular dance, much better. This was an APF celebration where he demonstrated that he was capable of cutting a rug. A proud moment for me, being referred to as a damn jewel in the award ceremony where I won the award named after him. We're not going to show this closing tribute so you have some time, but I want to reserve some time for anyone who wants to make a comment or share a Charles story. And then we'll end with the appropriate farewell, the FU cheer. And Amy, I'm going to ask you to help me lead that, okay, when the time comes? Okay, is there anyone who might want to share a Charles moment or a really bad impression?
So, you know, Charles would lead this every year at the AP reading, the FU cheer, the Furman University cheer, which is, if you know Furman, it's this lovely little Baptist school, and you don't even moving both feet at the same time is dancing, and that's like bad, and so like singing FU is like scandalous. So everyone's got to go, come on, everybody up, in honor of Charles. And he would do it in a repeat after me kind of way. And of course he'd get up and he'd stay in there, and he'd tell us, you know, he'd tell us the story about how the president comes out, and he'd go, and the president would say, if you one time,
if you one time,
if you two times,
if you two times,
if you all the time,
if you all the time.
Thank you. Just a note, we want to thank Stephanie, the Furman Psych Department, my husband, who helped me with the video, the opening music, which didn't work, but that's what it was. And if you're interested in getting a poster-ready depiction of the Brewerisms, there is an address. You can do this by way of the STP website. It's beautiful. We have it hanging in our department. And students do look at it and scratch their heads, so it's worth it for that. Thank you so much for coming. We appreciate it.